me, sir?
No. Any word from Karl Rove?
Sir, despite what he's been telling you, it's over. Romney lost.
Damn it. I guess it's time I explain to these good people the upcoming fiscal cliff. Think of the economy as a car, and the rich man as the driver. If you don't give the driver all the money, he'll drive you over a cliff. It's just common sense. Furthermore, rich people feel things more deeply than the common man. And we've got to change our approach to immigration. I have a progressive proposal to let into this country 200 grimy Irishmen a year. I've got lots of potatoes that need peeling and stables to be mucked out.
Sir, the Instapolls are in. You're just digging yourself deeper.
Well, then let me just say this. Marco Rubio es un pañuelo rosa.
I'm afraid you just made things even worse.
How? Why?
You just said Marco Rubio is a pink handkerchief.
This public service announcement is over.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I had a dream that I was in prison. I had a dream that I was in prison and I ran with a gang of poets. And all the other gangs were afraid to say our names, would do everything they could to maintain their distance, although resistance was futile. And they would kill each other and assault each other, but considered our truths too hostile. They didn't want us to take away the cartons of low self-esteem that society gave them, because that was all they had. And when they saw us walking down the block, they would dip in their cells. They'd rather dwell in that hell than face the heaven that we were speaking. They would rather see a fellow inmate's blood leaking than have us reach into their heart. Even though all we ever said was that we loved them and wanted to save them, but every jewel we gave them just made them fear us more. And in the mess hall, they would rather gang war than sit at our table, even though we carved right in it that none of us were better and we were all up in this hell together. And what was most important is that we posed a united front in front of the COs and the warden. And although the poets might have known a little bit more about our oppression, we were all caught in the belly of the beast. But then I noticed that the ones who listened were the other poets and the ones who needed to hear us the least. So we started flying these kites called heat. And we told them each one teach one and each one reach one, because the place where we're from is the place where God lives. So they started a rumor that the poets had the mark of the Most High on our eyelids. And poets started buying into it and getting all egotistical and believing that they were better than the other convicts. So I took it for as long as I could, and then I stood in the middle of the cell block and I yelled out, whenever I write, I try to make sure that I give insight and vision. And I looked around and noticed that the ones who needed to hear me the most wouldn't listen. The ones who needed to hear me the most could not listen. It was like the ones who needed to hear me the most didn't listen. And that's when I woke up this morning and realized that I actually do live in that very prison.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Unlike the Twilight series suggests, residents of a Serbian village are finding there's nothing really sexy or romantic about a vampire. In a bizarre public health warning, Mayor of Zorohe, Miodrag Vujetic, announced the real and serious threat of a vampire on the loose. The Week gives us a legendary backstory. His name is Sava Savanovic. Local legend has it that long ago he lived in an old water mill on the village's Rogasica River. He reportedly preyed on unsuspecting visitors who stopped by the mill in search of grain. The structure eventually rotted and recently collapsed, leaving the vampire homeless and, according to locals, angry and in search of a new home and new blood. Residents aren't taking the warning lightly by any means. Vujetic told ABC News, "I understand that people who live elsewhere in Serbia are laughing at our fears, but here most people have no doubt that vampires exist. We're all taking precautions by having holy crosses and icons placed above the entrance to the house, rubbing her hands with garlic, and having a hawthorn stake or thorn." Despite the Serbian officials' seriousness regarding the matter, WHBQ feels a wake-up call is needed.
Do they not know vampires aren't real?
Apparently not there in Serbia.
Okay, if you're watching in Serbia by some crazy chance, vampires aren't real and neither are zombies.
Still though, villagers are being prepped on ways to make sure the vampire does not make way into their homes. According to the Daily Mail, the local council had advised all villagers to put garlic on their doors and windows to protect them from the vampire, as it was well known. They can't stand the smell. Before its collapse, the vampire's mill was bought by a local Serbian family. Due to the frightening legend, they feared to do any maintenance work as they may disturb the vampire. But Round News explains how the mill still served a purpose. They decided to let people see the home of the legendary vampire and made a fortune by advertising it as a place that tourists can visit. The mill was visited only during the day. Vampire legends have long existed in Serbia, according to Fox News. In the 18th century, the legends sometimes triggered mass hysteria and even public executions of those accused of being vampires.
Serbia's ambassador to NATO has died after falling from a high-rise car park in Brussels airport. A Serbian government statement said the envoy, Branislav Milinkovic, who's 52, died instantly on Tuesday night. He was in Belgium for meetings of NATO foreign ministers. Reports suggest he may have jumped 30 feet or 10 meters or so from the parking level.
Wait.
What?
Why don't we cooperate?
You mean?
Yes.
Oh, this is so exciting! Oh, I can hardly stand the suspense! Oh, what will it be? Oh, what will it be?
Nine.
Let's get some more of this hour's top story. A U.S. official telling CNN Syrian forces are now combining chemicals to make deadly sarin gas for possible use against rebels and civilians.
We are building a religion. We are building it bigger. We are widening the corridors and adding more lanes. We are building a religion, a limited edition. We are now accepting callers for these pendant keychains. To resist it is useless. It is useless to resist it. His cigarette is burning, but he never seems to ash. He is grooming his poodle. He is living comfort eagle. You can meet at his location, but you'd better come with cash. Now his hat is on backwards. He can show you his tattoos. He is in the music business. He is calling you dude. Now today is tomorrow, and tomorrow today. And yesterday is weaving in and out. And the fluffy white lines that the airplane leaves behind are drifting right in front of the waning of the moon. He is handling the money, he's serving the food. He knows about your party, he is calling you dude.
The president also spoke out today about the lethal stockpile of chemical weapons in the hands of the brutal regime in Syria. Chemicals so deadly, one drop can kill within minutes. ABC senior foreign affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz on these weapons and whether it means the U.S. may be forced to take action.
Yeah, do you believe in the one big sign? The double white shine on the blue heels of your prime. Doesn't matter if you're skinny, doesn't matter if you're fat. You can dress up like the Sultan in your onion head hat. We are building a religion, we're making a brand. We're the only ones to turn to when your castles turn to sand. Take a bite of this apple, Mr. Corporate Events. Take a walk through the jungle of cardboard shanties and tents. Some people drink Pepsi, some people drink Coke. The wacky morning DJ says democracy's a joke. He says, now do you believe in the one big song? He's now accepting callers who would like to sing along. He says, do you believe in the one true edge? By fastening your safety belts and stepping towards the ledge, he is handling the money. He is serving the food. He is now accepting callers. He is calling me dude. Do you believe in the one big sign? The double wide shine on the boot heels of your prime. There's no need to ask directions if you ever lose your mind. We're behind you, we're behind you. And let us please remind you, we can send a car to find you if you ever lose your way.
The latest intelligence is alarming.
Whoa, it's us! We're in a lot of trouble!
Officials telling ABC News the U.S. is now seeing specific signs that the Syrian regime may be preparing to use the chemical sarin against opposition forces. Sarin is an extremely toxic substance that can kill a person in a matter of minutes with only one drop. The victim suffocated from the paralyzing effects of the toxin. This new intelligence has the Obama administration so concerned Harsh warnings came today from the president himself.
I want to make it absolutely clear to Assad and those under his command, the world is watching. The use of chemical weapons is and would be totally unacceptable. If you make the tragic mistake of using these weapons, there will be consequences and you will be held accountable.
We are building a religion. We are building it bigger.
The California Federation of Teachers has taken class warfare now to the extreme.
Did California teachers just ignite a war on the wealthy?
From teaching class to promoting class warfare.
It's indoctrination through animation.
I don't think this really deserves a warning, this clip, but it's clearly in questionable taste. Check it out.
When ordinary people wondered why rich people needed so much money, the 1% said, "Don't worry. This is good for you, too, because it will trickle down from us to you."
And at one point, as you may have seen, the rich actually urinate on the poor.
Oh, urinating on people. Classy image.
What was that?
That was an image of a rich man urinating on a group of poor people.
Pissing on poor people. Sorry, peeing.
Did you see what was happening there? The rich person is peeing on the poor people.
They actually have video of a rich guy urinating on poor people.
Is there any better lesson for your kids than saying the rich pee on the poor?
Yep, you saw that right. The rich urinating on the poor.
The rich are so bad they're urinating on the poor. Yeah.
You know, this is Marxist propaganda.
Soviet realism. Looks like something produced by the North Korean Ministry of Truth.
I almost want to go out and beat up a rich person, Karen.
I know if I was there, I'd beat you up.
The guy who wrote this stupid video makes a tidy sum for himself.
Yeah.
Not as much as Ed Asner, I'm guessing.
The liberal actor.
Hollywood millionaire. Radical left-wing Hollywood actor.
Anti-free speech thug.
Michael, you noted that Asner is a 9/11 truther.
Which I think is like the most loathsome thing you can be.
9/11 truther nutcase.
Inside job conspiracy theorist.
One of our producers confronted him outside the New York City theater where he is currently performing.
So you don't remember what...
Do you have any money?
Yeah.
Can I piss on you?
Pretty classy, Mr. Asner.
The 8-minute indoctrination animation is aimed at kids.
So far, no word this is being played in any classrooms. Hopefully, it's not meant for the kids. Please tell me it's not meant for the kids.
If it is, this is child abuse on an epic scale.
The video is not intended for children, and there were no plans to show it in the classrooms.
Mission accomplished, because they just got a whole lot of airtime on Fox News.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
What is Fox News? It's just a parade of propaganda, isn't it? It's just a festival of ignorance.
Hey, it's in
William first met at St Andrews University in 2001, where they both were studying. Will spotted Kate wearing a revealing dress at a charity fashion show, and the rest, they say, is history. The couple announced their engagement to the world in November 2010, and on the 29th of April the following year, millions of people from around the world tuned in to watch their big day. The prince finally claimed his princess with a royal kiss on the balcony of Buckingham Palace. To celebrate their union, the Queen bestowed upon them the title of Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. Kate and Wills have settled into married life, dividing their time between their North Wales home, where the prince works as an RAF search and rescue pilot, while Kate has happily settled into her army wife's role and doing lots of charity work. The royal couple have had an exciting first 18 months of marriage, jet-setting around the globe, visiting Canada and the Far East. But now brings a new chapter to their lives, with the couple said to be excited about their firstborn and the future heir to the throne.
And then...
Oh my Jesus Christ, 9 months, Kate's pregnant! Kate, Mom! Mom, quick, get in there! Quick! Kate's pregnant! 9 months, can you imagine? What are you going to be doing? Get down your nut for the next 9 months. It's going to be drilled in. They could go to war in Iran now. And just bob over there. She'll be out there, be looking at it. What are they going to call it? What? It's going to be a centaur. It's going to have hairy legs and hooves. It's going to be coming out. It's going to be the next king or queen of England. That's going to be in charge. So you better get down on your knees and start licking it up. You get the sick and the disabled. You get them out to work now. And you get them out working for nothing. We don't care whether they die of cancer. Johnny Osborne will be making his autumn statement. It'll be like rule fucking Britannia. The banks will be able to do what they like, get their bonuses. The new Conservatives will be re-elected on the back of a bloody baby. Jesus, that baby, it's going to be out, it's going to be marked, it's going to have the sign of a beast, it's going to be taken down into the dungeon. Kate is probably dripping in blood now as we speak. They'll all be like, they'll be doing the signs of the bloody cross over her head, and they'll be like spreading the news. Kate's pregnant! Kate's pregnant! They'll be screaming it from the rafters, the football stars, the celebrities. They'll be going all over the bloody place, screaming their heart out. She's pregnant! She's pregnant! He's done it! Well, congratulations! They've done it of him! And now the Queen will be out and be going, oh my God, oh, I'm going to be it! It'll be like, will it have ginger hair? Will it? It'll have bloody horns, mate! It'll be a beast! It'll be a beast! They'll be ringing the bells, Westminster, the Archbishop will be out. The kaboy, what about the boys in Afghanistan? What about the boys that'll be killing the Afghanistan? They'll be slaughtering them in the fan, they'll be out. There'll be the Union Jacks, the EDL will be marching up and down the street. Like the waiting big robots screaming and shouting. The Sun newspaper tomorrow will have a 58-page special pull-out on how they did it, how she was conceived. They'll be working out where it happened. They'll be working out. They won't be telling you that she was artificially inseminated like a bloody cow with the royal seed. And then you will know. You will know if you are unemployed, if you are vulnerable, if you're elderly, if you're a child in this country, you will suffer. You will say there will be a wind. It will come, it will decimate the whole country. There'll be a plague, there'll be barren, the whole thing. If anything was to Jesus, don't even say it. Don't even say it, don't prick your finger. Jesus Christ! 9 months. 9 months. And then, the rest of your life.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
Weezer Pot Pie. Dig a little ditch and hold the phones, Weezer Pot Pie. butterfly bones, weasel, pot, pie. Scribble on raisin, dribble on drones, weasel, pot, pie. And pick your teeth with the butterfly bones.
Tonight, we continue a tradition here at the White House by honoring some extraordinary people who've no business being on the same stage together. We've got Buddy Guy sitting next to Dustin Hoffman. We've got Dave Letterman alongside one of the greatest ballerinas of all time. I don't think Dave dances. All three living members of Led Zeppelin in one place. So this is a remarkable evening, and it speaks to something that has always made this country great. The idea that here in America, more than any other place on earth, we are free to follow our own passions, explore our own gifts, wherever they may lead us, and people from all around the world come here to make sure that they too can provide us the incredible gifts that they have. Tonight's honorees didn't just take up their crafts to make a living. They did it because they couldn't imagine living any other way. And that passion took each of them from humble beginnings to the pinnacle of their profession. And tonight, in the People's House, we have a chance to say thank you.
We head overseas. Take a look at the size of this protest today in Cairo, Egypt. Tahrir Square, tens of thousands of protesters reeling from tear gas, but determined to send a message to the world about their new duel over democracy. Here's ABC's Alex Marquardt.
They came by the tens of thousands, hurling stones, pulling down barricades. Riot police fired volleys of tear gas and retreated. As the masses grew, President Mohamed Morsi left the palace. Ever since the revolution that captivated the world, Egypt has struggled on its road to democracy. 2 weeks ago, President Morsi gave himself unchecked powers, he says, to put Egypt on a democratic path. There was outrage on Tahrir Square. We were there.
No one here believes Morsi when he says that these powers are just temporary. They say they've traded one tyrant for another.
Then a surprise. Morsi's Islamist allies rushed through a new constitution. Critics say it could make Egypt more Islamic and doesn't do enough to guarantee freedoms, including women's. Egyptians will have a chance to vote on the new constitution in 2 weeks. Tonight's protesters could boycott, but for now, it looks like it will go ahead, and the president may very well get his way.
My dear remaining fellow Australians, the end of the world is coming. It wasn't Y2K, it wasn't even the carbon price. It turns out that the Mayan calendar was true. While Australia's best and brightest at the CSIRO have not been able to confirm this, I'm confident in Triple J's prediction that the world is about to end.
Don't worry, it's actually a spoof. Australia's Prime Minister Julia Gillard agreed to make the video to promote Australian radio Triple J's breakfast show as part of their end of the world celebrations. It follows predictions that we will all die on December 21st, according to interpretations of the Mayan calendar.
Whether the final blow comes from flesh-eating zombies, demonic hell beasts, or from the total triumph of K-pop, if you know one thing about me, it is this. I will always fight for you to the very end. And at least this means I won't have to do Q&A again. Good luck to you all.
One of our students brought innocently to school what she thought was a money box.
There's been drama at Hunter Christian School in Newcastle, Australia.
In the shape of a grenade.
And it was. Brought into class by an 11-year-old pupil, the teacher took action.
He's immediately been concerned and contacted our head of primary. And the two of them then consequently arrived in my office with it in hand.
The school was evacuated and classes cancelled. A day off for students. Police were so concerned about the World War II pineapple-type grenade, they got in the experts.
I've had it appraised by our local bomb techs, who have sent some photos off to the Department of Defence, who are concerned enough to actually send people from Sydney to come and take possession of the item.
Luckily, the grenade turned out to be inactive, but the question remains as to how the youngster got hold.
Police are looking for a man who strangled a bus passenger in an unprovoked attack in London. The victim got on the bus at Victoria at around 1:50 p.m. His assailant got on at Cresswell Gardens near Old Brompton Road and immediately sat behind him. CCTV footage shows the moment the man used his scarf to choke his victim until he passed out. The footage shows the pair briefly exchanging words before the suspect suddenly removes his scarf and wraps it around his victim's neck. The pair grappled until the victim lost consciousness. A few seconds later, as the victim came around, the suspect attacked him again before he eventually stopped. The ordeal lasted around 30 seconds. The victim was assisted by passengers before he got off the bus at Earls Court and reported the attack to the police. His attacker was seen getting off the bus shortly after at 1:57 p.m. at Shepherd's Bush. The police are urging anyone with information to come forward.
I've got a question about the word suicide. But not as it refers to its literal meaning. When I was a little kid, my brother and I would go to a convenience store or a fast food place where you could fill up your own soda. And when you put different types of soda into your glass, that was called a suicide. And I thought that was just something my brother and I said, but I guess it's not. Everybody I know says that. And I was just wondering how that word got attached to doing that.
Breaking tonight, a major scare in a small town in Maryland. Street blocks are shut down by police, all in the search for a man with a big stockpile of weapons. And tonight, ABC 7 News has learned that through sources that the man who remains on the loose in this case is a so-called doomsdayer. Now, this all unfolded tonight in the town of Sharpsburg. That's where our Tom Rousey is live now with the late breaking details. Tom.
And as you said, Leon, a source telling us this man is what's known as a doomsday prepper, somebody who wants to be prepared should society deteriorate. He's still out there at this hour. Police have not been able to talk to him. Things have calmed down here. We're in a rural area of Washington County, just a few miles from the West Virginia state line. But Mills Road right there was shut down for hours today as a huge law enforcement presence came out to try to find this man and execute a warrant.
Totally shocking. Residents along rural Wells Road are not used to having their streets shut down for hours by SWAT teams.
This is pretty unusual for this neighborhood, for any neighborhood, I'm sure.
Maryland State Police say they were serving a warrant on a man who lives on this property. They had gotten a tip that he owns guns illegally.
They entered the home but did not find the individual.
Police say they did seize some guns, and if they determine the man owned them, he will face charges. One neighbor tells us the man is known for not liking the government, but every neighbor we talk to who knows him says he's a very nice guy.
De prins, dat gaat staan op nou!
Kijkie.
Intro.
I feel like I'm in a fucking track. Living in this little broken flat with my mom and dad. I'm a grand, I'm a brown, I'm a cousin, I'm a auntie. Finally, hot there's an oven in the concrete that I can't sleep in this black, cause it's flat. So fancy my pants, cause it's rats in the mattress. Got the black rings underneath my ass. Got some bad things happen in the night. My family's so poor.
How poor is they?
My family's so poor. Dara, can't even get a little butter with my broekie. Can't even get a cool drankie with my strookie. Moving in my stokies, drawing on the wall with a cokie. I'm bored and I'm lonely, all on my own. See, I don't wanna listen to what my mother say. I'm gonna run away, come back another day.
Police believe a search for marijuana ended with two men dead at an upscale home with a large pot-growing operation upstairs. Investigators say it appears two armed men broke into this house near Puyallup to steal the plants. The homeowner shot the men, and the two were found dead in the garage. Police worry these cases could become more common as people try to meet the demand for pot illegally.
On day one of this whole thing, just because small amounts of marijuana are legal to possess doesn't mean you get to go grow, have grow ops and cultivate marijuana, because if you do, you're still inviting danger to you, as we can see here.
The homeowner's 9-year-old son was home at the time. He was not hurt.
Option A.
Hit the streets, This is gonna be fucking ill. Maybe I get lucky.
So you like Kentucky?
Who are you?
Maybe I'm a gangster.
What's a gangster?
You don't know what's a gangster, Kiki. You can go to school if you want, or you can be like me and you can do what you want. Take a pool on the blind, feel the funky vibes kicking. That's the mother's the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Serious?
Do I look like I'm joking? In your pokey, look what I'm smoking. It's a duck up, lollipop. Does what get you like a huff on your cop? Does what get you like a huff on your cop? Does what get you like a huff on your cop? It's a duck up, lollipop. Does what get you like a huff on your cop? Fakey, now you owe me. Hoeveel little stokies? Take this little bakkie down the street to my homie, yo. Keep it low key.
The shooting happened Saturday in a quiet residential neighborhood. The dog was off the leash, but its owners say it never posed a threat. Now the owners say they are getting heat from police for telling us their story. Fox 32's Larry Yellen is here with exclusive details tonight. Larry.
Bob and Robin, residents of the Northside Buena Park neighborhood are still upset tonight, not just because police shot the puppy they all knew as the Colonel, but also because the shooting occurred not far from a preschool on a street where pedestrians, including children, could have been hurt.
Meet Colonel Phillips, a 7-month-old miniature bull terrier whose father was a champion show dog and whose owners hoped one day would be a show dog himself.
They look like Spuds McKenzie. You see in a Target ad, one of those, but they're miniatures.
But on Saturday afternoon, the Colonel became a target himself. He was shot by a Chicago police officer in front of his owner's gated Northside home. Police were writing a parking ticket for a van belonging to Al Phillips, the dog's owner, so Phillips came out to move the vehicle.
My little bull terrier followed me out. Then in all I hear is boom, boom, two shots. I said, you shot the dog.
Right now concerning that wild overnight police chase from Cleveland to East Cleveland, which ended in gunfire and death.
Yeah, two suspects killed, and right now East Cleveland police are giving an update on that investigation. Of course, we'll bring you that information as soon as we get it. News Channel 5 viewers had a front row seat to the action as one of our photographers was on a ride along with police when the first call came in. He shot exclusive video of the chase as it happened. News Channel 5's Paul Kiska continues our live team coverage now from the Cuyahoga County Justice Center in downtown Cleveland. And Paul, I know you just got off the phone to East Cleveland Police Chief. What did he say?
Chris, I'm going to have to back into the story with that breaking news because this is quite a complicated story. I just talked with Chief Spots from the East Cleveland Police Department. Here's what he told me. The man and woman who were killed inside that car in East Cleveland by Cleveland police officers, the medical examiner just went through that car and found no gun. Again, the medical examiner found no gun in the suspect's vehicle. Originally, police thought the two people that were killed in the deadly use of force by Cleveland police officers were both men. It turns out they were actually a man and a woman.
Rewind selector. Option B.
Hit the streets. This is gonna be fucking ill. Maybe I get lucky.
So you like Kentucky?
Huh? You smell like a Rastafarian. I don't speak to strangers, plus I'm a vegetarian. As I was saying, maybe I get lucky. Hooked up a little jobby berry cafe.
Hockey sockies.
Even hooked a little room up for myself in the basement. The one day, I found myself clapping in amazement. At the score, Max, no more rapping on the pavement. Outside the cafe. Max, normal is a lifesaver. Licked me up and down and said,
I like your flavor.
I was a zero, I thought he was a weirdo. But now I tune his right, Max, you might be a hero. He gave me a chance, I'll bump up the bass.
Pocky on the mark, right in front of your face.
Cause I said I could rap and since then I never look back. Now I put my pen on my bed and I flip a stack on my racks. And I'm attacking the track, so fresh, getting fresher. Diamonds are created from extreme pressure.
Pocky, yes sir.
Now they know it's me, when they see me on the TV rapping in the overseas.
You know I'm intense, bro, young.
Can you glo me?
Kaki.
So here's what happened. 10:30 last night, a Cleveland police officer believes he hears and sees someone in a car here outside 205 St. Clair Avenue fire a gunshot into the air. And that's right across the street from police headquarters. That leads to a big police chase that ends up in East Cleveland. The chase ends in the parking lot of a middle school there, Heritage Middle School. 28 police officers involved. Cleveland police officers unload their guns into that suspect vehicle, killing both the man and the woman inside that vehicle. East Cleveland Detective Sergeant Scott Gardner was asked, was this a shootout? Was this an exchange of gunfire? Listen to what he said.
And wait, here, do we know if there was an exchange of gunfire?
There's no evidence to support that at this point.
You choose, you lose, or you win. Choose your own adventure, option A or option B. Yes, yes, it's all up to you, so what's it gonna be? You've only got one life, make sure you choose carefully. When you choose your own adventure, option A or option B. Inquisitive student of life, you choose, you lose, or you win.
Get your cameras out, man. Look at this. Man, look at that chopper right here.
Technology is everywhere. Its use poses unique opportunities and unique challenges for all of us. The same is true for police. If a video recording becomes a standard part of interactions with citizens, those who protect and serve may be forced to make some difficult changes in how they execute their public responsibilities. And the honest witness that video can provide is all too absent from many of law enforcement's most intense interactions.
Cameras are everywhere. And they can be a valuable tool for transparency and accountability in law enforcement. Not only should the average citizen be able to film if they think the actions of an officer are out of line, but police should employ cameras. They provide great evidence, and if there's a question, it'll show, was their use of force justified?
Freedom-fighting patriots believe quite correctly that it is their First Amendment right to film the police in public. And yet they, like so many across this country, are being told by law enforcement that they do not have the right to film the police. America, if we can't keep an eye on the police, how can we keep them accountable to the people they are sworn to serve and protect? We need an end to this East Germany-like infringement on our inherent right to free speech. You can film the police in public.
Every day in America, police are too tough. Every day in America, police cross the line and abuse citizens. Every day in America, police get away with that. White America was shocked at what they saw police doing to Rodney King. Black America would have loved to have been shocked by what they saw police do to Rodney King, but Black America only could have been shocked if what the police did to Rodney King was something completely alien to their community experience, was something they couldn't imagine the police doing in their community. There's a Rodney King every day in this country, and Black America has always known that. Everything those cops did, they've done to someone else when there were no video cameras rolling. They've done it and they've gotten away with it. They know just how much assault and battery their department will let them commit. They know just how many false arrests their department will let them do. They know just how much latitude their department gives them on abusing citizens. They do it because they know they can. They do it because they know they will get away with it. None of the officers who cross the line will be disciplined in any way. None of them will be charged with the assaults and batteries that they committed. None of them will be charged with the false arrests. None of them will lose a day's pay. The police department doesn't need an investigation to figure out what happened. The department has already said the officers acted appropriately. Case closed. That's it. If the department does, by some miracle, by some chance, discipline anyone for what happened, I will immediately rewrite what would then be my mistaken presumption tonight that American police have once again gotten away with another crime against the American people they are sworn to serve and protect.
In some cases, an accurate recording of a police encounter changes everything.
On another level, it's troubling because citizens have a constitutional right to record the activities of public officials.
Since the Rodney King beating was caught on an amateur video camera, American police officers have known video cameras are their worst enemies. They will do anything they can to stop you from legally videotaping how they handle their responsibility to serve and protect you.
You're one to a west.
On what charge? You got nothing on me.
Oh, no? Well, listen to this. Resisting an officer, assault and battery, trespassing, disturbing the peace, miscellaneous misdemeanors, public nuisance, traffic violations, going through a boulevard stop, jaywalking, triple parking, conduct unbecoming to a wabbit.
Nice looking chapel.
Violating traffic regulations.
Following this morning's announcement that the nation's hard-ass cops had reversed their long-held stance of not being here to play games, Onion reporters spoke to veteran New York City detective Jay Malone, who confirmed that now is, in fact, an excellent time to play games with law enforcement officials.
We have plenty of time for this and are now finally ready to play games with no good punks. Wise guys can't assume that we were born yesterday and should feel free to waste as much of our time as they like. They think this is funny? Well, they're correct. This is now very funny. This is a very funny game.
Malone noted that hard-ass cops can be fucked with for approximately 2 more hours, at which point they will resume dangling low-life scum from rooftops until they get the answers they want.
You ever get in debates or discussions with intellectuals or academics that defend the current paradigm, then inevitably you'll get the social contract done in your face. It happens to me on a fairly regular basis. And, I remember the first time that it happened, I was talking to someone about how it was immoral to force someone to pay money to support wars, which is what happens in the United States. You're paying your taxes, and that money is being used for all sorts of immoral activities that you don't have any control over. And to me, that's inherently immoral. And the person's defense, when I was saying, well, how can you justify that? And he basically came back with, well, you know, it's the social contract. Now, the origin of the idea of the social contract was a philosopher named Jean-Jacques Rousseau, French philosopher from the Enlightenment era. And basically what he was saying is that rather than having the divine right of kings, which is what things were like in his day, what they needed was the divine right of crowds. So basically, the majority, the collective will, would be the absolute power in the land, and that the individual, all individuals would sacrifice their individual will to that collective. And if an individual did not comply with the will of the collective, then they would be forced to comply. For those of you who've looked at this kind of thing before, it's easy to recognize this is collectivism by force. Now, there's just one problem with this whole idea of a social contract. In order for a contract to be valid, there's two conditions that have to be met. One, the terms of the contract have to be clear and available to every single person who's implicated. And that's not the case. Two, every person who is implicated in the contract has to be in agreement. They have to know about the terms and they have to agree to those terms in order for the contract to be valid. You can't just write a contract based on your terms and just hand that to a person post facto without their signature and claim that it has power over them. This is why the powers that be want you to vote regardless of who you vote for. Because it's the act of voting where you are signing that contract, that you are giving them legitimacy. Now, if you refuse to vote, if you refuse to acknowledge that they have that power over you, then the contract hasn't been signed. You don't have a legitimate contract. Therefore, you don't have the right to enforce it. Here's the thing. I'm not saying I'm against all social contracts. You show me a contract that's in line with the non-aggression principle, and show me the dotted line. I'll sign. That's not what we have. What we have is a system where people are expected to comply with the will of men who aren't even alive anymore just because we're born. That's our signature, our birth. That's not a legitimate signature. You can't be born into an agreement that someone else made for you. And that's why Thomas Jefferson asserted that every generation needs to take responsibility for writing their own constitution, not just accept what came before.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Thomas Jefferson said, if you expect a country to be ignorant and free, you expect what never was and never will be.
Following this afternoon's arrest of Congress on the charge of over 23 million counts of manslaughter, our reporter spoke to Mark Westnick from Savannah, Georgia, just one of the many Americans that has lost a loved one due to the legislative branch's criminal negligence.
Because of Congress, my 23-year-old son died 2 years ago in Afghanistan. My nephew, he lost his leg in Iraq in 2006, and my brother died in Vietnam in 1969. Just recently this year, my wife couldn't afford dialysis, so I lost her too, all because of Congress. Congress killed my family.
Defense attorneys for the now incarcerated 538-member group have dismissed the claims made by Westnick and other victims and released a statement saying their client has been, quote, a pillar of the national community for over 200 years and completely innocent of any and all wrongdoing.
I got mugged on Christmas Eve, and I went up to my apartment and immediately posted on our local parents list the street I had gotten mugged on and when it happened. And I got two emails back within the hour, not from people concerned about me asking, oh, are you okay after you got mugged? But complaining that I had posted the exact spot where the mugging had taken place because what I had done might adversely affect their property values. It was enough of a shock that it made me want to look at how had this happened to people? How had a neighborhood become more concerned with its property values than people's experience of one another and their own town? What I started to do was look at the different ways we as modern Americans have become disconnected from one another, disconnected from the places we live, disconnected from the value we create, and even disconnected from our own sense of self-worth. And I came to the conclusion that corporations and the corporate mindset, or what we could call corporatism, were really at the center of this phenomenon. I wrote this book because I realized that people are accepting the ground rules of our society as given circumstances and walking around utterly unaware of the fact that these rules were written by people at a very specific moment in history with a very specific agenda in mind. If you look at today, what kind of world are we living in? We're living in a world where if you want to make money, you've got to work for a corporation. If you want to make what we call money, the money you're getting is central bank issued currency. There's really no way to prosper in today's world without selling out.
Anyone who has an insurance policy, a bank deposit, or a share of stock is helping to finance our business system.
That equation was really put in place during the Renaissance. We've been taught that the Renaissance was one of the great golden ages of civilization. The Renaissance was not a golden age, it was the end of a golden age. The Renaissance was the moment in history when kings decided they were going to monopolize all of the value that people were creating throughout Western Europe. So instead of letting people make stuff and trade stuff, they created chartered corporations. Monarchs were losing power and losing money, and they needed a way to control the rising merchant class. So they picked individual businesses to charter. And in return for the exclusive control over an industry or over a region, that company would then give the king shares of stock. People would have to work for corporations. Instead of letting people in different towns make their own money, everyone would have to use coin of the realm. Instead of people creating and trading and selling art, now you would have to have a sponsor, a patron, who would then bring you to court and let you be an artist. This centralization of power continued right through to our own time. The Industrial Age was really about perpetuating this dehumanizing trend. We like to think of the industrial age really as, oh, we created all these great machines so that we had better production. No. What the industrial age really was about was disconnecting human beings from their own labor, from their own consumption, from their own pleasure. The society that we built for the industrial age was built to mythologize the mass-produced object because we needed to create a society of consumers who thought that buying all of this stuff would somehow make them happier. In America in particular, we promoted the cult of the individual as the path to real happiness, that I'm going to be happy by making myself happy, when even this whole notion of a self who's going to be made happy somehow in isolation from all the other selves is real. You know, when I was a kid, I was raised in a middle-class neighborhood of Queens, and the houses were so close together that we had one barbecue pit in the middle of our big shared backyard. And every Friday night, someone would torch up the barbecue and kids would bring things, and we'd have this weekend-long cookout. As my dad started to make money, we moved to better neighborhoods. We ended up in Westchester where we had our own house with our own big yard and our own big barbecue. But then the barbecue became an event for just our family. You know, so instead of barbecuing with the neighbors, we were barbecuing almost competitively against them. You know, they would have porterhouse, we had sirloin, they had filet mignon, we had to find something even better. So the actual joy of the barbecue was gone. Now, sure, the GNP went up because more grills were being sold, but the actual community spirit, the fun of the barbecue, was taken away. Most of us spend so much time working and consuming that we have very little time and energy left to do anything that has to do with other people. You know, by the time you're done with work and buying and Costco and Walmart, it's all you can do to sit on the couch and watch a little bit of television before you go to sleep. It's really hard to muster the energy to get together with other people. And the more we behave as individual actors in competition with one another, the harder it is to encounter one another in a friendly way. I made friends with a guy, John, who has a restaurant named Comfort. And he started an expansion, but couldn't get money from the bank to finish it. So we came up with the idea for him to develop something called Comfort Dollars. So for $100, you get 120 Comfort Dollars to spend at his restaurant. You get a 20% return on your investment, and he gets the money he needs to expand his restaurant cheaper than he can get it from the bank. And this is the kind of thing that people can do anywhere, is start investing in one another and with one another and make their towns better, actually earn returns that you're not going to get from your Smith Barney broker, I promise you that, and see the return of your investment in the place you actually live. That's not hard to do. Now, that's why it's so funny and sad to me today that Obama talks about the financial crisis as a banking crisis, and the first thing we have to do is rescue the banks.
Vikram Pandit, Citigroup, $45 billion. John Stumpf, Wells Fargo. Lloyd Blankfein, Goldman Sachs, $25 billion each.
It's as if he doesn't understand that the banks are the very things that sucked us dry in the first place. The banks are not the institutions to be rescued. The banks are the institutions that we need to let die so that we can get on with business.
You found a flaw in the
reality. A flaw in the model that I perceived is the critical functioning structure that defines how the world works, so to speak.
This isn't just a crisis. This is actually an opportunity. This is probably the first moment in the last couple of hundred years that we've had to rebuild our society and our economy on principles that serve humanity instead of killing life.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
In tech news, Apple has responded to continued frustration with its iPhone Maps application, announcing plans to realign the Earth's geography to more accurately reflect the map software. Company executives say they've already started renaming streets, switching the locations of buildings, and destroying some landmarks altogether to be consistent with the heavily criticized Apple Map feature. CEO Tim Cook maintains that Apple's innovation marches forward. Quote, Apple is committed to providing the best user experience possible, which is why we are working to dismantle the Brooklyn Bridge and put London in Canada. He went on to assure customers that, quote, public transit directions won't be necessary in the new world, as there will be no public transit. While work is underway covering sections of Tokyo with a large green square and constructing buildings you can drive through to get to your destination, some consumers say these steps aren't enough.
I was frustrated when they released the software, but I figured it was all part of Apple's long-range plan to revamp the arrangement of the Earth and all its physical laws. And I just can't believe it's taken them so long to move Baltimore to the middle of the ocean where my iPhone says it is.
Apple says that the free upgrade will be available by Christmas time and will be mandatory for all iPhone users, while Google has already announced they have the resources to construct a rival Earth that will be just as you remember it.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.